As they begin their 30th season, the Grammy Award-winning choral ensemble from Austin, Texas, Consperare, presents an emotionally rich and wide-ranging program in their new Delos recording, House of Belonging. Known worldwide for expanding the boundaries of choral performance, Consperare has teamed up with the superb Miro Quartet to present a tapestry of intriguing new works by dynamic American composers Kevin Putz, Derek Skye, Alex Berko, Maura Smiley, Ross Lee Finney, Sharon Nova, Michael Schachter, and Margaret Bonds. Consperare founder and leader Craig Hella Johnson, who curated and conducted the music on House of Belonging, also commissioned many of the pieces, as well as composing the album's opening track. Thoughtful texts explore themes about spirituality, philosophy, the natural world, and the human need for deep connection, with verses by Ewan Tate, John Muir, William Stafford, Wendell Berry, Rabindranath Tagore, David White, Langston Hughes, Ludwig von Beethoven, Hildegard of Bingen, Kobayashi Issa, Ruta Kuzmikas, Andrew Marvel, and Kiara Skye. The Miro Quartet is one of America's most celebrated and dedicated string quartets, described by the New Yorker magazine as furiously committed and the Cleveland Plain Dealer as having an exceptional tonal focus and interpretive intensity. Miro is the quartet in residence at the University of Texas Butler School of Music and for over 25 years has performed on the world's most prestigious concert stages. Miro violist John Largess is a Curtis Institute and Yale University graduate. In 1995, he toured the United States and Canada with the Colorado String Quartet. Appointed principal violist of the Charleston Symphony the following year, in 1997, Mr. Largess joined the Miro Quartet and has been a vital fixture ever since. John Largess is here with us to discuss Consperare's new Delos recording, House of Belonging, as well as give us his unique musical perspective. Hi, John. Thanks for joining us.
So nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
John, in many ways, Miro and Consperare have been running on parallel tracks for years. Of course, both groups are also located in the same city, Austin, Texas. Tell us a little bit about what it's like to exist in the same city with Consperare and how your collaborations have evolved over the years.
It is fascinating that the Miro Quartet has been in residence at the University of Texas now for 20 years. And this is really the first chance this past season when we embarked on this commissioning project with Consperare, as well as this recording that came from it. We actually got to really share creativity together, really make work together in the same space, both in our vision and planning, as well as in performing. Maybe it's sort of an observation about many, many artists that and artist groups that we tend to pass each other like ships in the night. People get very busy doing their own thing, and it's hard even to make time sometimes when you're not on tour to go to other people's concerts. But it's been a dream of ours in the Miro Quartet, really for two decades, to be able to join with Consperare. Part of it is just the sheer beauty of what they do and the inspiration of how they do it. But also, as a string quartet, I would say our genre strives most to imitate the ideal of the human voice and the vocal choir. The idea of blended voices from soprano to bass, and each of those voices having both their own individuality as well as that superb blend that we can only really achieve in a human vocal choir, and certainly Consperare, as an example of that, achieves maybe better than anyone else I know in the United States right now. That aesthetic has always attracted us, as well as the creativity of Craig in his programming. And as you mentioned earlier, their commitment to new works, finding new voices, finding new ways to create for what is a very old art form, the choir. Just as we sometimes also have to struggle finding new ways with our collaborators and commissioners to reinvent the sound of the string quartet, which is also, by this point, a centuries old art form. It's been really exciting to work with them on this project. So many wonderful pieces came out of our two concerts of commissioned works for string quartet and choir that we performed in Austin last fall. And we chose a really, I think, eclectic and meaningful selection of those works to record in this new album, House of Belonging. String quartet, we don't deal with the spoken word and with text that is so central to writing for choir and for voice. And for us to embark in a project like that, exploring the meaning of multiple layers of text and how text affects the music and how text affects the singing, how text and the singing affects how we play in our nonverbal way. It was an amazing artistic experience, in some ways almost too intense, to have so many voices, compositional voices, in such a short time period, having world premieres. I also know that for the composers, it was a unique challenge. There are not that many pieces for string quartet and choir. It's a much bigger genre now that we've added these 15 pieces to it. But also for each of the composers, I felt every one of them had to dig deeply, maybe more challenging, different way to find how they would answer the question of juxtaposing these two forces together, these two sonic worlds. They're similar, but also so different. And it was also interesting to be able to do world premieres in those two concerts of so many works. And we brought all of the composers there too often, for at least, if not for the concerts, then at least for some of the rehearsals. And to have 15 composers interacting with each other, as well as with the choir and with Miro. I know that that was a very special experience for the composers themselves. And for us artistically, such a tremendous synergy of different voices, different compositional voices, different answers to the search for meaning and tonality and timbre with our groups.
What are your impressions overall of the recording?
The Miro Quartet records a lot of things on our own. I mean, we record a lot of string quartets. We release a lot of things. And for us, the recording process is always a chance to revisit and dig a little more deeply into any work that we're recording than we can in a live environment. Microphones hear differently than the human ear does. Microphones are much closer, and we can really entrust the microphone with a different level of detail than we can in a live performance. And certainly to kind of engage in that exploration of recording and discovery with some of these works, at the same time having Conspirare in the room as well, was an interesting process for us. And I think the recording was challenging. It always is. All artists get extra critical when you get to listen to a take of something once, twice, three times, four times, over and over again before you decide to go on. And we can put our pieces and our performances under the microscope. A good example of that is we recorded the Kevin Putz Home, originally the Miro Quartet, and recorded that entire string quartet, the original form of it, for one of our albums that is about to be released. And it was an interesting idea for Kevin to revisit the opening movement of this string quartet and add a complementary vocal part with text, mostly singing the words home, and then recording that with Conspirare for this album. So we got to discover this movement of this work, already written for us as a string quartet alone, and then another layer of compositional creativity, and then that layer of discovering it together as we were recording with the choir, going through different layers of the creative onion, and there's always another layer to peel away to discover the work. And to be challenged to hear a work that we already, for example, had premiered and recorded, hear it differently with voices or differently through the lens of the choir.
And of course, the composer often has a subject in mind with their piece. So for instance, with Kevin's piece, Home, he was led to write the piece originally when he experienced the refugee crisis in Europe.
We commissioned that piece from Kevin in 2017, and we engaged in quite a bit of dialogue before he wrote it with what ideas, what things in the world were really sparking, I don't want to say his creative interest, because human suffering and crises used in that way is not really what Kevin does. But Kevin responds to the world around him in a very empathetic, emotional, authentic way, and gives expression to his feelings and responses to what's happening in the world through his music. So we talked about the Syrian refugee crisis in particular, but the narrative and the story and the emotional intensity behind the images that we got to see and that Kevin used as his jumping off point for this work, I mean, they do give us energy. They give us fuel for our performances. They give us a message that we want to make communicated clearly. And before the piece was even written, and as we were working on the creation of it, there's so much of the entire piece that is tied into that idea, the journey from C major keys at the beginning to C major at the end, the leaving of the security of home through the music itself. But also whenever we perform this work, we talk about exactly what inspired it, not only in program notes, but verbally to the audience so that they have the context in which our composer was thinking and feeling and living as he created this tone picture. It's a very impactful work, even the first movement, certainly in its reinvented form. Even if you don't know the story behind it, I think it's very evocative of all of these emotions that we all can relate to. Leaving home, never being able to find or really return to our ideal home, that feeling of safety, exploring the ideas of what is home? Is it a place? Is it a structure? Is it people? Is it feelings? Is it relationships? And all of us can relate to these ideas, and the music itself speaks to that emotional language, and the context and the story of the piece, I think, speaks to that intellectual construct that we can then use to inhabit that emotional world when we listen. Every piece on this album has a story, has a narrative, has a context, has a meaning to it, which in the end is something that everyone listening, we hope they will relate to. And understanding and knowing more about the concept brings more awareness to the composer and to our world and to each other. But also, I think it can bring awareness simply to the listener as they experience the piece and allow them to connect in a more multi-pronged way with each of these works and what they're trying to say, what they're trying to get each of us to feel as we listen. Because in the end, music is an emotional language, more than one of ideas or abstraction or concepts. It is really, in and of itself, an emotional and visceral language where we can wordlessly communicate our experiences to each other, our experiences of real life, our experiences of real feeling, our experiences of real human experience.
On to Derek Skye's Black Ocean, Anthems of a Crowd 7. Skye wrote, "The text of the piece are fragments from a stream of consciousness poem by Kiara Skye called Cosmic Byproduct. The fragments of text that repeat and shift to create different patterns are meant to reflect the multidimensional nature of human thoughts and experiences."
I have to say, working with Derek, we love the very multidimensional way in which he thinks of music. And we also love, in this piece specifically, how evocative the vastness of space and time and how intimate the sound of the music is. Certainly, vocalizations that are not necessarily singing like making the sound shush or using these kind of very non-classical vocal techniques to create that feeling of intimacy, whispering as if someone is telling you a secret. There's a lot of that in this piece. I also have to say that Derek's really vast knowledge of Persian traditional music, Indian traditional music, non-Western classical musics, and how to weave elements and references and little tufts of each of these different styles into a piece like Black Ocean, I think it's also part of kind of the timeless evocation of the universe and our intimate living place in it that the piece has. It was for sure a joy for us to play. Totally different from all the other works on that album. We really had to learn how to play in Persian microtone scales. That was a little bit of a challenge. And also a rhythmical freedom that comes, again, from non-Western music. The quartet had to really master and learn and explore. We look forward, honestly, to playing more of Derek's works. We did not know him before this collaboration, and I expect even more wonderful, great things for strings and for voice and for the two together from him.
Michael Schachter's O Vorsprung is a work of musical archaeology. It's something from two musical artifacts of Beethoven. The first of these is the famous 1802 letter Beethoven wrote to his brothers, despairing of his encroaching deafness. The second of these is the slow movement from Beethoven's String Quartet No. 15, Opus 132.
For us as a string quartet, this was maybe one of the pieces that sort of actually did hit us very close to home. The Opus 132 Quartet is a piece that we've recorded and performed numerous times over the last decades. And the Heilige Gedankensang, the Holy Song of Thanks in it, maybe is one of the most transcendent and deeply meaningful quartet movements of all time, certainly one of Beethoven's. And to use portions of that in fragmentation to then have a dialogue with the text from the Heiligenstadt Testament, and again, that dialogue across the decades of Beethoven's life, that dialogue across the centuries of time that separate us listening now from Beethoven writing this music then. Michael Schachter's piece highlights both the differences and similarities between a vocal choir and quartet and the string quartet choir sound. So there is a dialogue between the timbres of the two choirs, string and voice, that also kind of musically personifies this dialogue between the two source materials. It's, again, very evocative work and very meaningful, very poignant for us to play and to listen to. One of the initial challenges with this project, and not every piece was written in this way, was to use the Beethoven 250th anniversary that was happening in the 2020 concert season as a springboard for dialogue with contemporary composers and their own music. It was fascinating to me that Michael turned to two pieces of Beethoven, two works, text and music, to actually explore that own dialogue that he himself has as a contemporary composer in 2023 with the voice of Beethoven stretching its long shadow throughout the centuries towards him. Gorgeous piece, and I think also very transcendent and timeless in its own way.
Okay, let's finish out with Alex Berko's You Through Me, which is a song about the Elizabeth Street Garden in Soho, New York. It's a story about how a physical place is linked with our experiences and memories of it.
I have to say, this was a fascinating work to get to know and perform. And what's amazing about it is so much of the text is the garden itself speaking to us, speaking to the listener. I would say, from an aesthetic standpoint, Alex uses the choir in many ways to be the voice of the garden, not only because they're expressing its text and its words, as if it's talking to the person walking through the garden or sitting in the garden. The listener in the audience to the piece is actually someone who is in that space in the imagination of the composer. The string quartet, in a way, evokes all the images of times past, present, and future that the garden can experience. Because as a place, even more so than as human beings or living beings, it has a long, long life, so to speak. And it can be many things to many people over time. Who is a place? I mean, we interact with places, whether they be homes, gardens, houses. We interact with them as if they are people. They're part of our lives. They have a relationship with us. They impact us. We take care of them or sometimes are in conflict with them. And I do feel like in this particular work, the string quartet is sort of the echoes and images from all the layers of time that are the experience of this place, the garden. Appreciate with Alex that there isn't really a message or a moral, which is the best use of this place, what should it be, what it should it not be, but more, at least for me and my perception, that it's sort of an experience in the audience as you listen to what it must be to be such a big part of humanity's life and experiences through time. Also great for us, particularly in the world we live in today, to not take for granted the places in which we live, the places in which we grow and enjoy or relax or unwind or connect with the world, and that they take care of us and we need to take care of them and have much more awareness of who they are, what they are, and their long life and long relationships with us. Wonderful composer and a great person and so wonderful to work with. And I think doing this piece particularly stood out as having its own unique kind of language and message and poetry. And also we'd be very excited and hopefully looking forward to creating more works with Alex in the future.
Conspirare's ongoing commitment to commissioning and performing music by today's most vibrant living composers is reflected in these world premiere recordings on House of Belonging. The Miro Quartet's participation was exceptional. Violist John Largess, thank you so much for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.